In Manhattan, a man has been taken into custody after swinging a samurai sword inside an Apple store. It happened shortly after 4 p.m. Friday at a store on 5th Avenue near 59th Street. A police spokesman said the man appeared to be emotionally disturbed and there were no reported injuries. A video posted on social media appeared to show the man swinging a sword while walking down a staircase inside the store. An Apple spokesman confirmed the incident but declined to comment further.
Could you imagine sitting in the Apple store looking at an iPhone and all of a sudden you see some guy on the steps swinging a sword around like he thinks he's Bruce Lee? What is wrong with people? CD72, my name is JDR, live on your iOS, your Android, Podomatic.com, and iTunes. Kyle Kwan at your-poetry.com. David Robinson at blogspot.com. And don't forget the Complaint Department YouTube channel. That's right. It's just me ranting and raving. Anyway, folks, how was your turkey day? I hope it was a great one. Mine was beautiful. Anyway, sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Salah Abdeslam is centered on a section of Brussels, Belgium, where he and his family live. Alan Pizzi is in Molenbeek, Brussels. That is a neighborhood that is linked to the terrorists and the alleged mastermind of the attacks. Alan, good morning.
Good morning. More than 400 Belgian citizens are known to have gone to Syria and Iraq to fight for ISIS, the highest per capita number in Europe, and at least 30 of them came from this suburb.
A series of raids here by Belgian police turned out to be futile. The main suspect is still at large. Salah Abdeslam is described as dangerous, and Belgium has issued an international warrant for his arrest. He's believed to have rented a black Volkswagen Polo that was found near the Bataclan concert venue. One of his brothers blew himself up with a suicide vest in the Paris attacks. A third brother, Mohammed, said his family could not understand why they did it. We are indeed thinking of the victims, the families of the victims, he said, but you must also understand we have a mother, we have a family, and he is still her son. French investigators believe this man, Abdelhamid Abaoud, masterminded the Paris attacks. He's been linked to a foiled terrorist plot in Belgium and an attempt to gun down passengers on a high-speed train to Paris that was foiled by three Americans. Aboud grew up here in Molenbeek, an impoverished Brussels suburb where the jihadist and criminal worlds meet. One-stop shopping, experts say, for drugs, explosives and automatic weapons. A terrorist dream, a security nightmare. Belgian Foreign Minister Didier Reynders called for better cooperation among European security agencies.
Intelligence is the only one way to block some possible terrorist activities before a terrorist attack.
U.S. intelligence officials say the mastermind behind the attacks is the chief ISIS operative for Europe. He's believed to be in Syria, where four of the plotters are also thought to have gone. Gail?
Thank you very much, Alan Pizzi in Belgium.
Hey folks, this is JDR, CD72, live on your iTunes, your Android, your iOS, Podomatic.com, David Robinson at Blogspot.com, Tyler Kwan at YourHyphenPoetry.com. What you heard there was just a tiny snippet of a clip from the Forest Hill Fires. was a pretty big fire out there, and they're suspecting arson. I didn't get a whole lot of information on it. Keeping my ears open. It's pretty big, and I'm concerned about it because I live in Queens. I live in Jamaica, and Forest Hills is really not that far away. And it's a pretty nice neighborhood over there. So, if you get some maniac running around setting buildings on fire, you got to stop that right away. He could be a jumper. He could jump from one neighborhood to the next neighborhood to the next neighborhood. He could do something really crazy. Anyway, enjoy yourself, and I shall be back later.
Welcome to the Advice Show, Meteor, the Common Sense Approach. So Donald Trump has been exposed again, ladies and gentlemen, as a person who is a white supremacist who only care about himself and want to disparage people of color. So he put up a tweet on his Twitter. We go ahead and put this up. And you can see that is some horrible numbers. And Donald Trump wanted to point out how bad black people are. And he liked to point out that black people kill up all the white folks in America. There's a problem with that, Mr. Trump. You see, according to the FBI numbers in 2014, there were 3,021 white victims of homicide, but only 2,488 of those victims were killed by white folks, Mr. Trump. Killed by white folks. So most of the crime that happened to white people are by white people. You know why, Mr. Trump? Because recently they did another poll talking about where people live, and the majority of whites live near whites. So if you have more whites living around each other, they're going to be white criminals that's going to do that to people within their community or their surroundings, Mr. Trump. But unfortunately, you like to take things from Nazi websites and things like that. And you are proving yourself that you should not even be worthy to try to run for the president of the United States. Now, of course, you have a lot of blind followers who think you're just a great guy. And some people told me that you're just real smart and you know everything and you should run the country. Well, he ruined that when he started off his campaign disparaging people of color. I never heard him not say one thing about anybody white who do something wrong. Let's talk about the issues that he tries to cover. He say immigration. Okay, we're going to play devil's advocate. Okay, illegal immigration, you should be in the country illegally. Got it. He wants to talk about building a wall, which is going to put us in more in debt. But you don't care about debt at all. Fine. Then he's talking about doing a registry for people of the Muslim faith. You don't have no issue with that because you're not a Muslim. Got it. But we understand. It's kind of like you don't really have a lot of thought process or sympathy of other people because it's not happening to you. Understand that. That's the selfish nature of a lot of people in this country. Then he's saying things about blacks. Well, all your life you've been conditioned to think black people's the worst people on the earth unless they're running the ball, jumping for a ball, singing, making you laugh. As long as they entertain for you, that's okay. So it don't matter if you kill them, you do whatever else to them. Their life really doesn't matter at all. Let's go along with that. Fine. Now, let's go to the next step. Why isn't Mr. Trump addressing terrorism for what it really is, and why Homeland Security has deemed white supremacist groups the number one terror threat domestically? But he won't address that. Why? Because it will actually make him right. He won't do that because he got to protect his base and protect the people that he aligned himself with. See, Mr. Trump's exposed his own hand, and a lot of people was upset at the video I made about Donald Trump. But really, Donald Trump is the reason that I made that video. We don't need Adolf Hitler Part 2 in America. This man gets mad when people criticize him and they don't treat me right. They treated me unfair. Really? And you want to be the president of the United States and someone treats you unfair? You cry so much like a baby, Mr. Trump, to say you got money, influence, I'm going to make people do stuff. You can't even make moderators do something. You threaten, I'm not going to go to a debate if you don't do things this way. Like a bunch of crybabies. You think world leaders going to bend to you like that? They're not. They can care less about you and what you got going on. But, you know, Donald Trump, we, as I stated before, register to vote. There are any other candidates for you to look at. I'm not going to say what candidate I'm kind of looking at or who's out there. You know, I'm trying to keep that out of it, at least for right now, because I don't want to try to sway people. But I'm seeing at least so far one candidate standing out to me. And it's not Hillary Clinton. Make sure we put that out there, because I will not support anybody who sides with Margaret Sanger and who admits they're a feminist. Not going to do that. But there's one candidate out there that's talking a lot of sense, and maybe some of you will figure that out, who I'm talking about. And I just think he's getting better and better with time. But Donald Trump is not the guy that needs to be leading this nation, because he's going to get this nation in World War III for his childish antics, his he's going to have turn the country upside down with all his Nazi propaganda that he wants to do to people in this nation. Y'all better wake up by this guy. Hit me up in the comments, future commentaries, subscribe.
Hey, now, that was a pretty good speaker. He has a, I can't remember his name, but he has a channel on YouTube, Benjamin, I think something Benjamin. I'm not quite sure. Listen, I can't agree with everything that he says, but one thing is for sure, you know, Donald Trump is one thing for sure. He is radical. He has a big mouth. And he's moved into a niche that the American people were looking for, or many American people were looking for. That was the perfect niche. No politics here. Now, you know, I'm not a straight up politician. I'm a businessman, and I'm just gonna tell you like it is, and you know, yada yada yada. He puts his foot in his mouth quite often, and one thing I do believe that this gentleman just commented on is that. I think he is a radical. I don't know if he's. I can't say that Donald Trump is racist. I don't know that. I have heard him say strange things. I heard him, as a matter of fact, the last presidential race, where he kind of stepped in. Was it the last one, or was it like a couple of years before he was deciding whether he wanted to get into this one or not? I don't know. But anyway. He said something that was weird because the reporter asked him, you know, how does he feel that he would do with a minority population? And Donald Trump said, the blacks? Oh, I have a good rapport with the blacks. And it was just that he said, the blacks. Which kind of, you know, it's like, why do you use that, you know, I mean, you know, I can't really get mad about it, but it's primitive, you know, it's not up to date, man. Why are you saying that? I mean, I don't consider myself an African American. I can be a black American, you know, but when you just say the blacks like that, it's kind of weird. You know, and Donald Trump's kind of weird. I am not going to vote for that man for president. I don't care if I just have to throw my vote away. I'm not voting for him because he is radical. He would thrust us into a third world war. You know, he has no idea of what he is doing. He is a businessman. He can do business. He cannot do international relations. He is not the guy you want talking, you know, to the Prime Minister of Russia, or, you know, President of Russia, or the Prime Minister of China, or whatever. You know, this is, no, you don't want Donald Trump doing that. That would just go so far south and really quick. Anyway, this is JDR. You're listening to CD72 on your iTunes, your Android, your iOS, and Podomatic.com. I'll be back a bit later. Bye-bye.
I've emceed tons of weddings. I've literally emceed like 350 weddings. I've emceed and DJed weddings. It's a beautiful day, but I've seen it all. I've seen the drunk best man speech. You know, this guy's like, hey, we thought you were gay, but I guess not. Cheers. And then I've seen like the maid of honor like cry. Like, she always cries. It's never going to be the same. One time, it was a Korean wedding. This girl paused for 30 seconds. She paused. She was like... And then this grumpy Korean married man, he just yells out, come on! We're hungry! And then everybody was looking at me wide-eyed like... Because I was the one that said it. I was the grumpy Korean married man. I was like, let's move it along, 30 seconds. Every bride thinks she's cute, you know, she does the fake bouquet. Like, on the outside, I'm professional. On the inside, I'm like, just fucking throw it. Throw it. I've seen every rude thing. I've seen a fight break out at a wedding. There's like an ex-Asian gangster wedding, and a fight broke out. There's a glasses shattered. I felt so bad. The bride was crying. She was crying, and then the groom just yells out, at my wedding, dog? At my wedding, dog? To everybody, at my wedding, dog? Which means these guys fight all the time. Like, his friends fight. They don't care. They'll fight anywhere. This poor guy, like, in a few years from now, he's like, at my daughter's birthday, dog? On Jesus's birthday, dog? This guy's going to be at his own funeral in his casket. His fight's going to break out. He's going to pop out. At my funeral, dog? Heaven's gates, dog? I've seen girls always wear white to their friend's wedding. Girls don't, ladies don't do that. Don't wear white. Like every fifth wedding, there's always like a girl, she's wearing white. And then her friend of me goes, Gina, are you wearing white to Susie's wedding? This is off-white. I thought you went to FIDM. Don't you know your colors? Get off. Get off my dress. There's always that old lady, she thought she used to be super hot, but you know, she's trying to hang on to it. She's always wearing like a long red dress. She's like the soundtrack in her head, is like, lady in red. She's drunk. Her boobs, like, they're so wrinkled, they look like your fingers went in the bathtub for too long. You know, they're like, they look like two Shar-Pei puppies hanging on for life. But you still look, you still look. You gotta look.
happy belated Thanksgiving to all six of you. I said, I hate to be so sarcastic like that, but, you know, it happens. I had fun on Thanksgiving. I was with a dear friend, and it was absolutely wonderful. And, no pressure, you know. But, you know, however you spend it, you know, as long as you're happy and you're doing, you know, what you want to do, you know, then it's cool. Okay, I'm going to give my shout-outs right now, and it's going to be to the NYPD, the FDNY. That is 298, 127, 58, 137. North Shore Animal League, ASPCA, my girl Judge Judy, and I always forget Wildlife SOS of India. When I first started this podcast, I guess it's a little over a year ago now. Yeah, we celebrated 100 episodes. So, you know, and we're doing it once a week, so it kind of, you know, evens out. I don't know, maybe, you know. But anyway, you know, SOS, Wildlife of India, they rescue a lot of tortured elephants, and one of the elephants was Raju, who was held in captivity for over 50 years and basically forced to eat paper, hardly given any water. He was in pretty bad shape, and they rescued him in the dead of night. They stole him, actually. And Raju recognized this, and it is said that the elephant actually cried. So, you know, he is the crying elephant. And now they've been, like, just rescuing elephants, because they went through a whole court case with Raju and everything, and they've just been rescuing elephants and bears. And you have to go to their website and see, like, some of the bears that they rescue. I've never seen bears like, they have really cool hairdos, really. They're really cool hairdos. Yeah. Anyway, you know, I thank you for listening. You know, I hope you're safe and healthy and warm. It's not cold outside at all. I got windows open here, boy. It's not cold outside at all. Everything is just really relaxed. Anyway, thank you for listening. And if I don't come back for a short one, I will see you next week, Friday or Saturday. Bye-bye and thanks.
Life is different. It's different in the suburbs. I realize that because I live in the suburbs now. It's different. Like Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving different in the suburbs. The white people be having nice Thanksgivings and an end on time and everything. In the hood, our Thanksgivings didn't start until like 1 o'clock. They had to give out flyers. Females free before 12, you know. There was dudes outside our apartment talking about, yo, is bitches in there? Thanksgiving in my house didn't start until somebody opened up that Smirnoff. It's going down right then and there. I always had that aunt that was a Jehovah's Witness. No, she ain't supposed to be celebrating no damn holidays. But she showed up anyway with her crazy family because somebody cooked. And she the first one. Nobody paying her attention because she just Jehovah's Witness shit all her life. And then as soon as she get drunk, she the first one to pull that titty out. She's dancing, doing an electric slide with it out. You can't see it, it's electric, but nobody's there. I wanna groove. Yeah, da 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 da. First one get drunk and wanna tell the truth, and we all love it. Hope she bring up cousin Lonnie. We all know he got a little something extra on the side. She be the first one to tell the truth. Bobby is not that boy's father. And the boy sitting right there, he's 44 years old. Bobby's not that damn boy's father. Y'all know it. Bobby's a good man. He ain't that damn boy's father. They ain't right there crying. I hate y'all. Y'all ain't no family. Every Thanksgiving, y'all gotta bring my father into it. I can't wait to go back down south, man. Then her husband, Uncle Rick, he crazy. I went to their house one time and I knocked on the door, right? He was on the other side. He knocked back. I said, Rick, you in there? He said, Rick, you in there? I said, Rick, you crazy, man.
He said, Rick, you crazy, man.
I ain't like spending the night at her house. I was like 8 years old. And we get ready to go to bed at night and she want to threaten us with Armageddon. I got to have nightmares about Satan. I remember she used to take us on them Bibles, you know, they give out the books like 6 o'clock in the morning. And nobody like Jehovah's Witnesses is knocking on their door. But that's the only time your moms let you curse.
Mommy, the Jehovah's Witnesses is at the door. Well, curse at them and tell them to go away. We don't want them damn books.
And you be at the door like this in the peephole. You better get the fuck away from my door. I'm gonna murder you, motherfucker. I swear to God, I'm gonna fucking murder you, motherfucker. Get your ass, motherfucker. Make pussy ass, motherfucker. I'm gonna murder you, pussy ass, motherfucker. Bitch ass, take that fucking stick in your ass, motherfucker. Bitch ass, motherfucker. Punk, motherfucker. Bitch ass, kill you, motherfucker. I'm gonna murder you, motherfucker. Bitch ass, punk, pussy ass, motherfucker.
Did they leave? No, mommy, they still there. Well, do it again.
I'm gonna kill you, motherfucker. Bitch ass, motherfucker. Punk ass, bitch ass, motherfucker. Then I had my Uncle Bud. That was my grandmother's baby. She called him her baby. Up until I made it, he was the superstar of the family because he went to Vietnam when he was 17. And he lost his leg in Vietnam. But my grandmother don't use the word lost his leg. She say, blowed off. She don't know how to pronounce blown. She said, it was blowed off. And nobody in the family like him. Nobody like him. He like 63 years old now and lost 3 wives, got a $50 a day coke habit, and he's mean. And he come over to the house for Thanksgiving. We don't even go down there and help him out. He got to put his wheelchair out the car. He got to put his wheelchair up and get in there by himself. And we be just looking at him in the window. Can't stand him. Who invited him? You invited him? Kathy, you invited him? Ain't nobody invite him. Ain't nobody invite him. All of us saying this in the window. Ain't nobody invite him. Who would invite him? Joseph, did you invite him? Ain't nobody invite him. And he come upstairs. He want to terrorize the kids with his missing leg. Come here, little nigga. I'm put this leg on you. Come here. I'll put this leg on you. And the kids get scared. And one of them has said something about him. They said, your wheelchair pillow stink. And he just sat there and started crying. Because we thought he was bad. Because he got his wheelchair gloves on. The ones that's cut off at the fingers. So we always thought he was bad. Then he attacked my aunt, because she's 28 with 8 kids. And she'd have kept her legs closed, she wouldn't have all them damn kids. And she go off, why you always talking about my kids? This is my kid. You ain't got to say nothing about my kids. Because he always talking about my kids. This is my, nobody like you. Because he always talking about my kids. Don't be talking about my kids. That's why your wheelchair pillow stink. Watch when all their fathers come home from jail, they gonna fuck you up. And then my grandmother, she was like, when he lost his leg, she was traumatized. So she still think he's that 17-year-old boy, her baby. And she come out the room with this obvious wig on, a nightgown filled with grease stains. And she come out there, she turned to Mahalia Jackson behind him.
Who in here yelling at this baby?
His leg was blown off. And Vietnam! And every time she said Vietnam, her wig be crooked. This baby's leg was brutal. In Vietnam! Oh, damn it, Grandma, just take the wig off.
It's right here, it's fine. Don't worry about it, it's fine.
Come on the floor. These incredible pictures show the moment an elephant who was held in chains and beaten and abused for 50 years cried as he was released to freedom. Raju, the elephant, was left bleeding from spiked shackles and living on handouts from passing tourists after he was captured and tied up by his owner. But, after 50 years of torture, the animal cried tears of relief after he was rescued by a wildlife charity in a daring midnight operation. Fittingly on American Independence Day. North London-based charity Wildlife SOS stepped in to save Raja from dying in his bonds after learning of his plight in India. Every day, the majestic animal was forced to hold out his trunk and beg for a few coins from passers-by, surviving only on plastic and paper for food. However, last week, a 10-strong team of vets and wildlife experts from the charity were joined by 20 forestry department officers and 6 policemen to seize Raju from his suffering in the Uttar Pradesh area of India. The mission took place under the cover of darkness, as fewer people would be around for the dangerous rescue and the animal could be protected from the searing heat of the sun. Purbhai Neepal, the charity's UK spokesman, described the rescue as incredibly emotional for the team. She said, "Raju has spent the past 50 years living a pitiful existence in chains 24 hours a day, an act of intolerable cruelty." The team were astounded to see tears roll down his face during the rescue. "It was so incredibly emotional for all of us. We knew in our hearts he realized he was being freed. Elephants are not only majestic, but they are highly intelligent animals, who have been proven to have feelings of grief, so we can only imagine what torture half a century has been like for him. Until we stepped in, he'd never known what it is like to walk free of his shackles. It's a truly pitiful case. But today he knows what freedom is, and he will learn what kindness feels like and what it's like to not suffer anymore. The daring rescue came exactly a year to the day since the charity was alerted to Raju's plight by the Uttar Pradesh Forest Department in India. A confiscation process went through the courts as Raju's owner did not have any legal documents for his possession, meaning the charity could rescue him from suffering. It is not known exactly how Raju came into his plight, as little is known about his early years, but the charity believes he was poached from his mother as a young calf. Miss Bainipal said, "The poachers either slaughter the mother, or they drive the herd into traps that are small enough only for the babies to fall into. The mother cries for her baby for days after he's been stolen. It is a sickening trade. The calves are then tied and beaten until they submit to their owners. Their spirits are effectively broken." We discovered Raju's case was particularly tragic. He'd been poached as a calf, and then he has been sold on and sold on. Incredibly, we believe he has had up to 27 owners. He's been treated as a commodity every 2 years of his life. By the time we found him in July 2013, he was in a pathetic condition. He had no shelter at night, and was being used as a prop to beg from dawn until dusk from tourists visiting the sights of India. He hasn't been fed properly, and tourists started giving him sweet food items, and because he was in a state of hunger and exhaustion, he began eating plastic and paper. His nails are severely overgrown. He has abscesses and wounds because of the shackles, and continually walking on a tarmac road has led to his footpad overgrowing. Once the court order was finally issued, a team led by Wildlife SOS founder Kartik Satyanarayan carried out 2 days of surveillance before launching the rescue. Mr. Kartik said, "As we watched, we quickly realized we had to act as quickly as possible, as his situation was so desperate and the cruelty so extreme, so we decided to move the rescue forward by a day. The chains around his legs had spikes which were cutting into his flesh, and each time he moved, pus would ooze out of wounds. Pain and brutality were all he knew. His cruel handler even tore out the hair from his tail to sell as good luck charms. The exploitation and abuse just had to stop." However, even on Thursday evening, as the mercy mission began, Raju's owner tried to prevent his rescue. Mr. Kartik said, "He began to shout commands to terrify Raju, and tried to provoke him. It created an incredibly dangerous situation, as a bull elephant could snap a human like a toothpick if he becomes afraid or angry. When that failed, he then put a series of chains around his legs in an attempt to prevent us removing him, so viciously tight that were cutting into his legs. But we stood our ground and refused to back down, and as we did so, tears began to roll down Raju's face. Some no doubt were due to the pain being inflicted by the chains, but he also seemed to sense that change was coming. It was as if he felt hope for the first time in a very long time. We knew it was now or never, so we made the drastic decision to move his transportation truck closer and then walk him 200 yards. Every step would have been agony, but we had to take him, or he could have vanished forever. We decided we'd remove the shackles once we'd got him to safety." Incredibly, Raju calmly complied, despite every step causing searing agony. "It was as if he knew we wanted to help him," Mr. Kartik said. Once he was loaded and given additional sedation, a convoy then escorted the 5.5-ton elephant, 350 miles on the back of an open-top lorry, to the charity's Elephant Conservation and Care Center at Mathura. Incredibly, he stepped out of his truck and took his first step to freedom at 1 minute past midnight on July 4th, which felt so extraordinarily fitting, Mr. Kartik said. "The other elephants in the sanctuary awoke from their sleep as we pulled in and came to have a look. It was an extraordinary moment. Radu was then fed bananas, banana leaves, mango and bread and biscuits and given water before the charity's head wildlife vet Dr. Yadi Rajkadpka began the painstaking process of removing his shackles. Mr. Kartik said, it took him and two handlers 45 minutes to liberate him as they'd been wound round his legs to prevent their removal and to cause pain if anyone tried to take them off. We all had tears in our eyes as the last rope which held the final spike was cut and Raju took his first steps of freedom. The entire team were exhausted, but incredibly elated as he has suffered such unthinkable abuse and trauma for so long. He'd been beaten so badly, his spirit is broken. Over the weekend, Raju received emergency medical attention to his wounds as well as a proper bath and food. It will be a long rehabilitation process, but we will teach him that humans don't mean pain and brutality, but it's going to take time, Mr. Satyanarayan said. When he is ready, he will initially join two companion elephants called Rajesh and Bola, who once also suffered unthinkable cruelty. They've both been rehabilitated and once he settles he will learn how to live again by following their example, before he joins the rest of the elephants, including five flirtatious females to live out his days. But for the moment he's tasting freedom for the first time in his life and he'll spend the rest of his life in a safe compound living out his days in dignity, free from suffering and pain. The charity has now launched a campaign to raise £10,000 to help Raju begin the start of his new life in a new enclosure which will allow him to roam with his adoptive family.